In a world of Democrats,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
And Republicans,
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
You need a voice of liberty. Look no further. You found it. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome to the Tom Woods Show, episode 310. We're joined today once again by Brad Berzer. Brad is a professor of history at Hillsdale College in Michigan. This year, he is a visiting professor at the University of Colorado at Boulder. He is the co-founder of the ImaginativeConservative.org website. He is also editor-at-large over at progarchy.com, a website dedicated to progressive rock. He's the author of numerous books, among them American Cicero, The Life of Charles Carroll, and J.R.R. Tolkien's Sanctifying Myth, Understanding Middle Earth. Brad joins us today to talk about music in 2014. He and I are interested in progressive music, progressive rock music, and I know there are some of you who may not share that interest, but I hope you will enjoy this conversation all the same, and that it will make you, well, curious enough to check out some of this stuff. It's my great pleasure to welcome back right now Brad Berzer. Brad, thanks for being here again.
Thanks, Tom. It's always great to talk to you, and it's great to be on the show. It's much appreciated.
I was going back and looking over the whole year 2014, all the episodes I did. I actually created a list of them, tomwoods.com/episodes, and you and I talked about Russell Kirk last year, and we talked about music at the beginning of this year. We talked about music, I think it was like 5 days into the new year, and I called it, the official title of that episode is The Episode of the Year. Like, 5 days in, I knew this was going to be the episode of the year. So I thought, you know, given how totally over the top that was, let's close out the year. I got one more episode tomorrow until I go on my hiatus till January 5th. But I thought, yeah, let's bring Brad on here and let's have another episode of the year. Okay.
Well, if we can't be over the top with prog rock, we're in big trouble.
You're darn right. That's what it's all about, right?
That's right. What would Russell Kirk say?
Exactly. Actually, you know what? I'm a little terrified to know what he might say about this particular topic. Although I have a funny feeling that if you and I were sitting around with him, we might be able to bring him around.
Well, I don't know what Russell Kirk would say. I know that he was not a fan of his daughters having any kind of rock albums at all. He famously threw a Metallica album in the fire.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
So, well, but I could picture him. I mean, I think he would be a great keyboardist for a prog band.
Yeah, you're darn right. All right, what I want to do on this particular episode is to have you take me and the listeners, I suppose, but mostly me. I just want to know what was some of the music that came out in 2014 that I missed that's worth listening to? And I'll tell you, I missed everything. Just so that you know, going into this, I missed it all. I was basically trying to catch up on music from previous years. The only album I bought this year was Homo Erraticus by Ian Anderson. I bought that because it's Ian Anderson and I love him, and I had him as a guest on the show, and I'll link to that in the show notes. Show notes for this episode, very important, by the way, everybody. You'll get links to everything. Every piece of music mentioned will be linked at tomwoods.com/310 because this is episode 310. But I found, Brad, that I found it hard to get into that album. Maybe I need to revisit it. I find that in his more recent work, Ian just doesn't have those catchy melodies, those interesting hooks that he used to have. I wasn't drawn in, and what didn't help was I was just getting into English Electric by Big Big Train at the same time, and that was just so much more compelling on every level that it just maybe I wasn't fair to Ian.
Well, no, I'm the same way. It didn't even make my top 20 list as I tried to narrow things down. And of course, it's a great album in so many ways. And some of the people I've written with at Progarchy have really, really praised it. So, and they're people I respect a lot. But for me, I'm exactly with you, Tom. There just weren't enough hooks. It was almost too progressive and too experimental without it ever kind of pulling things together and telling a coherent story. And that is what I think makes something such as Thick as a Brick, or Thick as a Brick 2, so compelling, Aqualung, And that just doesn't seem to be there on the new album. But it's one of those, and I don't know if you do this, Tom, it's one of those that when I got it, I put it aside and I thought, okay, at some point I want to give this more time. And I just haven't had a chance to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
There's many other things I've been focusing on.
I bought the electronic version, but I think it comes with an electronic version of the huge booklet that he produced. And that seems great because the idea of the album is it's an epic tale of the history of England, basically. Very, very interesting. But as you say, in this day and age especially, there's so much else that I could be listening to that even Ian Anderson, who's basically produced the soundtrack of my life from the time I was 14 on, it's hard for me to make the time even for him.
Yeah. Well, and of course, we're both. Like, we do so many other things, too. Music just has to be a hobby, more than a profession, obviously. But yeah, they're just, you've got to pick and choose. And hopefully we can come back at some point to Anderson and find something great in that new album.
Exactly.
I'm sure there are good things.
No doubt.
And I think I love the concept. You know, the idea of erratic man and trying to figure out all the different types of man. And it really is kind of an anti-ideological look at the complexity of man. So there are great things about it, definitely.
Oh yeah, there's no question about it. And I'm told that it lent itself to a great concert, that it was performed live very, very well. You know, but the difference is that when Thick as a Brick 2 came out and I didn't know if he was ever going to make it to the Kansas City area, I got on a plane and flew to Chicago to see him there.
Oh, wow.
I wanted to hear that perform. Plus, I wanted to hear all of the original Thick as a Brick performed. And then it turns out the next year he came to Kansas City anyway. But I have no regrets. You know, no regrets. Whereas this time I didn't feel like I've got to hop on a plane and go hear this. You know, so it's too bad. Now, I shared with you an email I got from one of the supporting listeners of the show who make the show possible. And this was somebody, I won't say her name because I haven't gotten permission, but she's in New Hampshire. She's a supporter of the show, and she says that she's never really gotten into progressive music before, and she said, you know, forgive me, but I think of music as something to put on in the background, and so I'm not sure this is the type of music for that, but I was making an offer that if you're at a particular support level of the show, supportinglisteners.com, by the way, I will send you the double album of Big Big Train English Electric Full Power. Because you got to get the hard copy here, because it comes with this beautiful booklet with the lyrics, with the explanations of the songs. I mean, I just cherish this thing. So it turns out I ordered the entire stock they had on Amazon to give to people. So they were out of, you get that awful skull and crossbones thing, basically, of temporarily out of stock, which means maybe we'll have it in 2050. Maybe we'll never have it. I bought the whole stock. So I ended up tweeting Greg Spott and saying, Greg, you got to replenish the supply over at Amazon. I bought them all. Well, she got it, and I said, I want you to start off with these few songs and just listen to them carefully. She wrote back and said, boy, that guy has got such a voice. What do I listen to next? I'm going to send her on a completely different path. I'm going to send her to Going for the One by Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Of course, I welcome your suggestions, but how about from 2014 in particular? I mean, I'm telling my listeners all the time, you got to get English Electric by Big Big Train. You just have to. And I know that Big Big Train sounds like a hip-hop group. You got to take my word for it. They are the best of the best. They are just you're going to say to yourselves, you know, I thought the show was making me a better person on an intellectual level, but spiritually it's making me a better person because of this music. What happened, though? Well, tell me what happened in 2014.
Well, just a quick note on that.
Yeah.
I was so glad you forwarded that note. I forwarded it on to Greg as well.
And wonderful.
Greg, as far as I know, Greg's favorite album is Going for the One.
Oh, so, that's incredible.
Or it's either that or it's an early Genesis album.
Okay, so well, you can't go wrong.
But that's right. So it's one of the two. But I know for a fact that's his favorite Yes album. So that's a great choice. And David Longdon, the vocalist for Big Big Train, of course, just has, I think, the best voice in rock right now.
He is such an incredible singer, and it is an outrage. I'm telling you, people listening right now, it is an outrage that these people aren't a household name and that he isn't better known. What a voice this guy has. It just won't quit, and he's not ridiculously over the top with it.
He's
so disciplined with it. He uses it just the way it should be used. I mean, as I say, I'm just so drawn to these guys.
Yeah, me too, Tom. And I think David he has a perfect idea. He has a perfect understanding of knowing exactly what a lyric means and what should be emphasized.
Yeah.
And he's a real writer. He and Greg are both serious writers.
Oh, they're not beautiful
just,
things.
You know, hey, baby.
No, that's right. No, they're writing
poetry.
Yeah, such beautiful things about England and about localism and neighborhoods and flesh and blood relationships. And then it turns out I started to get into the Underfall Yard, the album
yes.
right before this one. And there are
Which
a couple
is just
songs.
As good.
Yeah, where Greg Spaughton is talking about his complex relationship with his father, his recently deceased
yes.
father. I mean, just blowing me away on every level. All right, but look, listen, we can talk about this forever, and I am in your debt on this because you introduced me to them on this show.
Well, that's great, Tom. That means a lot. Well, so for 2014, there was so much. Some of the other prog artists were kind of overwhelmed. Just how do we deal with so much coming out this year? Far more than 2013, 2012, 2010, 2009. We really hit something different here in 2014. And so, how do we even narrow down what came out? I have tried, and I have this on our website, Tom, at progarchy.com. I've listed what I think are the best 8 albums of the year. And I know 8's an odd number, but it was hard just to break down with so many. I mean, there were probably 30 or 40 really good releases this year. And with our move to Colorado, I was having a difficult time keeping up. And so were the other prog artists. So I just tried to narrow it down to 8. And what I found, Tom, and I'm still kind of working through this, but 2014 seems to be a very different year in terms of prog than the previous years. Almost everything, and Andy Tillison of The Tangent has argued that we really started a new phase of prog rock, what he called the third wave, around 1994. And I think that's probably true with Marillion, the Flower Kings, a number of other groups, Spockspear, that were really coming out at that time. But I think that we, in 2014, I think we've entered maybe a fourth wave. And the reason I say that is because the music that came out this year tended to be not necessarily instantly recognizable as prog. A part of that is probably because there's so much, but there's a lot that's coming out that's very diverse, very interesting. It's extremely intense. And it is progressive in the sense that I think people are really exploring new sounds in ways that before maybe they were trying to better Genesis. And that doesn't seem to be the case now. So, Tom, my top 8 and the first 7 are in no order. And stop me anytime here. The best of these, so again, top 7 and then the number 1. So I guess we'd say, 8 through number 2. I would put at the very beginning of this list a Polish band, which probably is even less known in America than Big Big Train. And this is a band called Newspaper Fly Hunting, of all
The only Polish band I know is Riverside.
Yeah, and they're nothing like Riverside. And yet they're all, and I've only gotten to know them a little bit, they're all scholars at the University of Warsaw.
Awesome.
So this is a hobby for them. And I don't know their politics, but they're certainly not crazy.
Okay. That's
good. They're probably more or less on our side of things. But what they've done, and I don't know if you remember this, Tom, you're a little younger than I am, but right around the turn of the move from 1980s into the 1990s, there was a huge movement, kind of a revival of the Doors, and kind of a neo-psychedelic movement. And I think what these guys in Poland have done is they've mixed, if you could imagine a super progressive version of the Doors with really intelligent lyrics, that would be this band. And in some ways, I think they've done the most interesting stuff of the whole year, not necessarily in creating beauty, but in doing some new things. So again, Newspaper Fly Hunting, all one word, crazy name. So many prog.
What's the name of the what's the name of the album?
The name of the album, which fits perfectly with the theme, is called Iceberg Soul, and it's a very introspective kind of existential. And that's another thing I've noticed. Almost everything this year has been very existential, in the way, kind of in an old Pink Floyd kind of way, not navel gazing, but definitely existential. You know, prominent questions: what's man? How does man get along with other men and so forth? So, Newspaper Fly Hunting, and the name of the album is Iceberg Soul. So So well worth owning.
Now, okay, before we go to the next one, is the Pink Floyd album in your list?
It's not. Okay, no, I didn't put it in the top eight, but I think it's a great album.
Yeah, I do. Can you say something about it, even though it's not in the list? Because I haven't heard it yet, so I can't comment. But what I have heard are a lot of the complaints and that it's just leftover stuff. Or when I hear that something is, and I know you've used this word, Brad, but when I hear something is atmospheric, I take that to mean droning and boring. So help me out on this.
Well, I kind of like droning and boring, depending on how it resolves. But I like walls of noise, especially when I can put my headphones on. The new Pink Floyd, I think, is very good. And they're always, ever since Roger Waters has left, there's always the complaint, well, it's not really Pink Floyd.
Yeah, right.
But I just don't find that a compelling argument. Roger Waters was fantastic. But, of course, you know, you always want to commit suicide after listening to his albums, too. So, you know, I think there's something Gilmour brings, a real joy that was not really there, not even close to being there, in the old Pink Floyd. And this album, the last album, which they say is their final album, and I believe it, they haven't done one for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, this was an album, it's a sequel to what they did in 1994, which was a huge hit at the time.
Which and was course, the better of the two albums they did without Waters.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, no question. Division Bell was, I thought, very good. But this is even better, I think, and in large part because there's no ego. This is Pink Floyd honoring Rick Wright, who has passed away, their keyboardist.
Yeah.
And what they did, the reason they didn't write new music is because they wanted him to be a part of the album. And this is all stuff they recorded with him. And now what they've done is they've gone back and augmented it with new playing, new techniques, 20 years, technology advances. And I think it's a gorgeous tribute to their keyboardist. So is it radically innovative? Not at all. Is it a statement of beauty and friendship? Absolutely. So you know, for that, it gets high marks for
me. All right. Well, I appreciate that. See, I always felt like Gilmour, you know, who can make a decent solo album. It's not going to be, super innovative or anything, but it's, you know, he can make a decent solo album. I felt like when he felt that he now was the driving force of Pink Floyd, I felt like he was trying too hard. He was thinking, well, I can't just make David Gilmour solo album, so it has to start off with 3 minutes of weirdness. You know, like it became formulaic, you know? And then it has to be, and it was just too much of, I have to make a Pink Floyd album. Whereas when they were all together, I think it was just, let's make some music.
Right. No, I think that's an absolutely fair statement. What I don't get in this new album is that it has to be a Pink Floyd album. I think it has to be a tribute to Rick Wright.
Yeah, and that's very sweet. Yeah. That's very good. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. So the next album is from an English band. And it's actually a double album. They released one and then the other. And the band, I don't even know how to pronounce it, though I've gotten to know one of the guys. It's just two guys named Dave. And I've gotten to know one of the Daves pretty well online. The name of the band is called Salander. So S-A-Lander. S-L-A-A-N-D-E-R.
Okay.
And their two albums are called Crash Course for Desert and Stendek. Those are the two albums. And what I really like about it, first of all, you can tell, I mean, these guys are probably in their 50s from what I know, and they've been listening forever, and I think they both have businesses on the side. They're entrepreneurs. This is just their hobby. But what they've done in kind of pulling together almost 40 years of prog is they have made two albums, or one album that comes in two different packages. They have made an album that is as eclectic as you can possibly imagine. So they go from kind of a Pink Floyd atmospheric to, and it's not cheesy at all, they go to kind of a Brian Ferry, Roxy Music glam, and then suddenly you're in a dance studio, in an actual, you know, dance, kind of decadent place, disco. And then it switches again, maybe a Moody Blues tune. And it's amazing the flow of it, just to go from one genre to another, and yet it ties all together. And really beautifully done. These guys clearly are audiophiles. They have just engineered a great thing. And they're also great lyricists, again, very poetic. And no one's heard of them, but still very, very good. Extremely good.
Okay, let me mention in between here that I went to see Yes this year. And I've it's the second time I've seen them without John Anderson. And they were better this time than they were with the earlier vocalist, I thought.
Right.
But to me, having a veteran of dozens of shows with John Anderson, it's I'm not just grousing that the original guy isn't there. It's that he brought to it a whole other dimension. I don't know how to describe it. I mean, John Davison does a creditable job, and he has the pipes, and he's very likable, and there's and he's a humble guy. There's a lot to like there. The new music struck me as inoffensive. But my gosh, for Yes to strive for inoffensive is not good. But the reason I bring them up is that their opening band was a band I've heard mentioned in progressive circles for some time. It was Sid Arthur.
Okay, sure.
Now, when they played, though, unfortunately this happens with a lot of opening acts, they were so loud that everything got lost in the mix. It was just a cacophony.
Yeah,
and I couldn't make anything out of it. And it's too bad because I think they're decent. Are they any good?
I know the name, but never delved into
I thought
them.
You so might. Okay.
No, it's not Tom, but I should definitely.
Okay. As soon as you finish going back over that Ian Anderson album, you can look into.
Yeah, I will. Sid Arthur, absolutely.
Okay. All right. So tell me your next one.
All right. Next album is an album that you would like very much. It comes out of a group of fans that really like Big Big Train. In fact, they met on the Big Big Train website, and it's a group called Fractal Mirror. And you may know they just, their producer is Larry Fast, who's a very famous jazz guitarist. And it's two Dutch guys, two great guys, and an American, a really good guy from Pennsylvania. In fact, a guy that I think the world of. And he's their drummer, and they've done most of this online. And this is their second album. It's called Garden of Ghosts. So the title of the band is Fractal Mirror, and the name of the album is Garden of Ghosts. And this, again, this is not your normal prog. I don't know if you would remember this, Tom, because I think you'd be way too young. But in the early 80s, there was a pretty interesting goth band related to The Cure, but much more gothic than The Cure, a band called Bauhaus. And they sent, and Love and Rockets was an offshoot of that. And they have a kind of feel, a gothic feel, but then they go into very different progressive directions. And just a beautiful album, especially with Larry Fast, this famous jazz guitarist, doing so much of the engineering for it. Really great album.
Okay.
In all kinds of ways. So it's something well worth checking out.
I'm going to listen to it. Absolutely. Okay. All right. Give me your next one.
Yeah, the next band is huge, and they should be. They're not big here in the U.S., but they're huge in England and Australia and New Zealand. This band is Ten Spirits, and I love this album. This is their second album, and it's called Scorch. And Ten Spirits is the brainchild of, an Austrian-English mix, but they brought into the mix the XTC guitarist, also the Big Big Train guitarist, Dave Gregory. So this is beautiful guitar prog with a bit of a Tears for Fears sound, a Beatles sound, an XTC sound. But you know, if you could take, say, XTC or the Beatles and make it really prog, that's what Ten Spirits are.
Wow.
And their lead singer, their first album would certainly rank as one of my 10 favorite albums of all time. Their first album, which is called Wired to Earth, has a 14-minute song called Broken. That's based in terms of the music. It's based on the Allman Brothers, but the lyrics are all about almost losing a child and then basically forgiving God for all of that. And I don't think they're really religious, but they have a great sense of grace and of forgiveness. And that song Broken from the first album, I can't make it through without tearing up.
Wow,
it's that powerful. And I don't cry that easily. I mean, it's a really, but this new album, Scorch, is a little bit poppier than the first album, but just beautiful. There's a video out called Summer Now. And I guarantee you, if you just listen to that, Tom, you just put the YouTube video Summer Now by Ten Spirits, you can't not be happy after.
All right. Well, I'll embed this video. See, it's great to have the show notes page, tomwoods.com/310. I'll embed that YouTube, and I'll also embed the English Electric Part 1, which is on YouTube to whet people's appetites. But yeah, I'll definitely do that. And of course, I'll listen to it myself.
Yes, good. Well, if you wanted to think of a Big Big Train song that it's related to, it would sound a little bit like Hedgerow.
I think is one of the best songs ever.
Yeah.
I just love
just
that.
Just amazing. Okay, next band, Chicago band, Fire Garden. These guys are also just incredible. Z Bag is the leader of it. He does most of the writing of the lyrics as well as of the music. They kind of started off as a Dream Theater tribute band, but I think they are 1,000 times better than Dream Theater. So this is a Chicago band called Fire Garden. And the name of their album, which I think fits, it's pretty heavy. Of all the albums I'm listing here, this is by far the heaviest and the one that tends towards metal. But the name of the album is called Sound of Majestic Colors. And so their leader, Chicago guy named Z Baig, B-A-I-G, just a great band. So if you like Dream Theater, this is better.
Well, let me say, I almost posted this on your Facebook the other day, but no kidding. I went into the local mainstream grocery store the other day, and in the grocery store, I hear Surrounded by Dream Theater from the Images and Words album. And it's mostly like it was like, you know, 1 in the afternoon. And so it's all like old ladies shopping. And I thought to myself, I'm the only person who recognizes the significance of what's happening right now.
That's crazy.
What is the explanation?
It wasn't a Muzak version.
No, it was the actual song. So, I mean, there's got to be somebody on the inside at Dylan's. I don't know what else to say.
Well, I just found out yesterday, Tom, you'll get a kick out of this, that someone has put out a lullaby album of Rush songs. So, so I actually listened to it on Amazon yesterday. It's not bad.
That's funny.
You'll imagine mixing VeggieTales and Baby Mozart with Rush.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, if I could imagine John Anderson being kind of lullaby-ish, right? But I wouldn't think of Geddy Lee in that way.
Well, the opening song is 2112. And it's all done with Baby Mozart instrumentation. It's really pretty fun.
That's funny. I'm going to lull you to sleep with this dystopian tale.
Exactly. What a great way to indoctrinate the children. Oh, okay.
All right.
I've got three left.
Okay.
So my third from the end, but again in no order, is another Englishman. I think this guy is an incredible musician, a great bard. And I mean that in the best sense. He's got a traditional bardic sense. And he loves commenting on social things, on cultural criticism. I don't know if he would agree with us, Tom, on politics, but he certainly has a very insightful view on the world. His name is John Bassett. And he's got his main band, is a bizarre name, King Bathmat. But this year, he actually released two albums, and they really fit perfectly together. The first album, so John Bassett, B-A-S-S-E-T-T, first album is called Unearth. And I'm not even sure how we would describe it. Maybe a more progressive, harder version of Donovan from the late 60s. It's got a bit of a psychedelic feel, but it's acoustic, essentially. It's John sitting down, singing to us, telling us, you know, criticizing TV, criticizing government, criticizing communities, and also talking about the good, the true, and the beautiful. He's got a really interesting sense about things. And so I love it. Great album, Unearth. On the other side, he just released about a month ago what could only be described as progressive metal. Not quite as hard as Fire Garden, but pretty hard, but it's without vocals. So what an interesting mix. You get his acoustic psychedelic album at the beginning of the year, and at the end of the year, this very kind of gorgeous, but in a strange way, this progressive metal album. And that is not under his name. He instead released it under the name Arcade Messiah. And he's been kind of laughing on Facebook. It's sold better than almost all of his other albums. Here he is. He's not singing, and he has a great voice. If you like, and you do, if you like David Longdon from Big Big Train, you're going to absolutely love John here. He's great.
Wow, okay.
Absolutely great. Okay, second to last album, and again, this collection of the top seven albums before I get to number one. And this is from one of my all-time favorite guys. In fact, he's coming to Colorado at the end of February to lecture and perform at CU. This is the lead singer and the founder of The Tangent, Andy Tillison. Great guy. And this year, he didn't release a Tangent album, which is his, they're big in England, not as well known here in the U.S. as they should be. But he released what could only be called a jazz, fusion, progressive rock, progressive jazz album under the name the Andy Tillotson Multiplex. And the name of the album is called The Electric Symphonia No. 2. And it feels a lot like an old Weather Report album, a lot of things that were released in the early 70s. But it is, you know, if we look at some of these other albums we've been talking about, that kind of progressive rock, the heavy metal, the pop, this would be probably one of the best jazz albums of the last year, as well as one of the best progressive rock albums. But it just defines tasteful. The entire album, not over the top, quite the opposite of over the top, but not droning either. It's just a kind of beautiful. It's the kind of thing you'd want to put on after dinner and with a glass of wine. Just a gorgeous album.
Wow,
and that just came out about a month ago.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's Andy Tillotson Multiplex.
You mentioned him when you were on in January because you were telling me about the tangent, and you were saying he'd be a very interesting guy to talk to.
I can't wait to meet him in person. He is he's a former labor activist in England. He now is kind of turned against all of that. He calls himself a good guy anarchist. So I'm pretty interested in talking
Well, how about that? Okay.
Yeah. Great guy. Even if we had radically different politics, I'd still like him a lot. I think he's mischievous. He's fun. He just does some really interesting stuff. And he's one of these guys. He's a Neil Peart kind of guy. He does whatever he wants. And you got to respect him for that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So what's the last one of the seven?
Are you ready for this? Yeah. Hopefully I haven't talked too long here.
No. That's impossible, Brad. Not possible.
Okay. Well, here, this is my favorite album of the year. And I think it's truly one of the best albums of the last 20 years. Another Englishman who, again, and this is neither here nor there in the way that I judge him, but he would be a Tom Woods fan without question. He is, he's a self-made entrepreneur. He is a genius at watchmaking, watch repair, and watch sales. That's what he does in his real life. He has a watch business and just an incredible guy. This album is called Capacitor, and the name of the band is Cosmograph. This is their fifth album, and it's really just this guy. His name's Robin Armstrong. I can't even begin to describe how beautiful this album is. It is dark, but it's an album based on a story. And if you can imagine for a moment, Tom, you know, just, instead of steampunk, which of course is kind of a fad and all the rage right now in science fiction, this is what I would call seance punk. It is a mixture of progressive era revivalism, but mocking it with the possibilities of eugenics and scientific discoveries of energy that you could basically create a utopia. And Robin is, he's no utopian. You know, mix Arthur Conan Doyle, Ray Bradbury, and put a lot of dystopia in it. This is an incredible album. And the music's beautiful too. I don't even know how you would describe it. I suppose it probably comes closest to middle 70s Pink Floyd, but it's so much better than that, and it goes so much beyond that. It's too dramatic for Pink Floyd, but I'm sure that's where Robin takes a lot of his inspiration from. But what an incredible album. This, to me, Capacitor is a must-own. Anybody who likes Big Big Train, it's kind of the dark side of Big Big Train. So imagine a hedgerow, here you just feel great. Capacitor really makes you think. It's the kind of album, it's the way you would feel after reading Fahrenheit 451 or Martian Chronicles, that kind of bittersweet element to the soul. That's what Robin does with his Cosmograph album.
All right. Well, you've definitely piqued my curiosity.
It's a must-own. Absolutely.
Now, Brad, having gone through all these, I want to ask you how you get to a point where you're able to digest so much music in the course of a year, and it's not simple music that you get into after one listen. You have to give it some attention. I myself, you know, you and I are both pretty busy. We have different types of work we do. Sometimes you're teaching, sometimes you're writing. But when I'm sitting in the office, I put music on. I can't give it my 100% attention, so it takes me longer to get into it. But what happens is, after a while, let's say the most catchy parts of it begin to stand out to me. And I say, oh, you know what? I think I like track number 5, and I'll go back and listen to that a few times. It's very rare that I say, I've got something I'm so excited about, I can't wait to listen to it, I'm going to sit down and give it the attention it deserves. How are you actually going about listening to the music?
Well, it's, you know, I've been doing this, as have you, Tom. I've been doing this since I was a kid. I can remember the very first Prog being played in my house was Jethro Tull, and Yes. This would have been about 1972 when I was four. So I had two older brothers, so I've been listening to it a long time. I do not, however, have a musical sense. So I know what I like, but if someone starts explaining to me, you know, why they chose this time signature or not, I wouldn't.
Exactly.
I'm lost.
No idea.
So one of the great disadvantages I have as a reviewer is I pretty much have to lock onto the lyrics. And if I don't like the lyrics, that's the first thing for me. So, you know, and if I like the lyrics, I'm usually willing to listen to the music and kind of figure out how well the music fits the lyrics. And I know for many people, especially in rock, that's just completely backwards and they could care less what the words say and they'll repeat them, you know, whether they would agree with them in real life or not. It's just they dissociate themselves from them. I can't do that. So every time I get an album, I listen to the lyrics first and foremost. I give it a really good run through. I look at the booklet. I don't like downloading. So that's, you know, when I review something, like I love this Arcade Messiah, which is all instrumental, it's really hard for me because I know I love it, but it's hard for me to review just because I can't latch onto it. I need the words.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Tom, what I do, I actually am one of these very strange people. I don't, you and I both are obsessive about writing. I really can't write without music playing, and I'm able to kind of do both and digest both at the same time. I also go for an hour walk every day. I go for 4 miles every day, regardless of weather. And I usually alternate. So one day I listen to a new album, or, you know, an album I've listened to a couple of times maybe. And the next day I listen to books on tape. And plus, you know, I have a bit of a commute into see you and back. So I just, there's really never a moment that I don't have music playing unless I'm watching a movie or something with
yeah.
the kids. So that's how I try and do it. Yeah, you know, sometimes some weeks it's easier than others. Yeah, sometimes I'll go a couple of weeks where I haven't listened to anything new. I haven't digested anything. I won't say it's taken the joy out of it. In fact, it hasn't at all. But since I've started reviewing Prog, and I've been reviewing now for about 5 years, it definitely changes the way that I think about it. So, you know, I don't just buy an album every once in a while and then just delve into it. You know, now I'm getting two or three a week that I have to kind of think about, vet, make a decision. Do I want to listen to it? Do I not? And, you know, these guys, most of these guys are non-professional in the sense this is not their primary job, and they take the time to send me a CD. And to do so free, I feel I'm obligated to at least give it some attention as much as I can. I'm sure you feel the same way with books and
oh, sure.
anything else. You know, your writers, right? You know, people, you know, your Tom Woods, you get emails all the time, I'm sure, from your fans. And yeah, you don't dismiss them. I mean, you can't deal with every one of them perfectly. But certainly you're going to deal with them.
Yeah, I do my best. I mean, these days I'm just so buried with this, you know, this work that I've got. But yeah, I mean, I always appreciate it. I warn people on my website that, you know, I can't guarantee I'm going to be able to respond anymore. Like it used to
right.
be, I would at least say hello and something. And now it's basically come down to it's either that or I see the kids. And only at that point do I intervene and say, you know, something has to give here. But, you know, what does it say, though, about the music industry, that what appeals to us is music by people who aren't even doing this full time.
That's right. No, and this is just their love. And, you know, how interesting. I mean, of course, part of this, too, is, you know, Tom, and you're a best-selling author. You know how this works. Everything's become so decentralized over the last 20 years. You know, book publishing, record labels, and a lot of people this year, if you look at Classic Rock Magazine, even my friend Robin Armstrong, I just named his album the top album of the year. But, you know, he and I disagree on this. There are a lot of people who really believe rock is dead. And they're equating the death of rock with the death of record labels. And frankly, I'm fine having those labels.
Yeah.
You know, they're not promoting stuff I like. They always have promoted a kind of sameness rather than a real interest. This is one reason progressive rock is so interesting to us. It doesn't fit the mold of, you know, what Sony wants us to hear or Capitol Records or whatever it is. Yeah, they're doing interesting stuff. If you get two guys like these Daves who do Salander in England, Now, they're not going to care what anybody thinks. They're doing this because they love it.
Well, you know what?
Great.
Yeah, let me translate this into libertarian terms.
Sure.
A group like Big Big Train is like Ron Paul, whereas what Sony is putting out is Rudy Giuliani, John McCain,
right,
and Bob Dole. You know,
that's,
and if that's what you want,
right,
then go ahead. I mean, I can't stop you, but you're depriving yourself of a source of happiness in your life. And I say that not jokingly in any way. I mean, this stuff improves my life in substantial ways. I mean, I am a happier, more contented,
yes,
person because it exists. And by the way, I also listen to music when I write as a rule, and I can even remember, and a lot of times just out of laziness, like even before I would have an iPod or something, I've just listened to the same CD over and over again. I can remember what CD, by and large, I was listening to through a particular project, like the Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. I was listening,
yes,
to an album that's not even really all that progressive, and it's not one of their best, and I'm not even a huge fan of the group. It was Two Against Nature by Steely Dan.
Because
there were a few good tracks, like Jack of Speed, that I liked on that album, and I
absolutely
kept and Gaslighting Abbey was so disturbing, I just couldn't help listening to it over and over. So when I see that book, I actually see Steely Dan, oddly enough. But
I do
the same thing. I mean, who wants to work in absolute silence, right? I feel like I'm in prison.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I do the same thing. I look at my, you know, stuff I've written, and it's always related to something I'm listening to at the time. But, you know, I think about even bands, and I've never really talked Rush or Neil Peart, but, you know, even Rush, you think about how they did and how they built their reputation. Their label was a hindrance to them. It was not a help. And I think that, you know, when we're looking at how really great bands have emerged, they've often done it in opposition to the label and gone out on their own and taken chances and made choices. And Big Big Train, I wish them all the luck in the world. I hope they make millions of dollars. I hope they're millionaires, but I hope they do it without becoming corporatized in some way.
Well, I would hope so too, but I think given how long they've been around, I think it's unlikely they're going to go down that road. And every interview I read your interview with Greg Spaten about,
yeah,
what he aims to do, which is to create extraordinary music. Well,
that's
great.
Right.
That is wonderful. And that is exactly what he succeeded in doing. And what's been fun about having my little show here is a couple of times I've been able to bring on as guests people I deeply admire. Of course, Ian Anderson, I'll link in the show notes, tomwoods.com/310. I'll link to the interview with him. But then I also had Steve Hogarth of Marillion. And most of my listeners, I would say 99%, have no idea who Marillion is. But, I mean, they've sold 15 million albums. That's nothing to shake a stick at. I mean, they're reasonably successful. And Hogarth turned out to be such a fun, pleasant guy to talk to and to really hit it off with him, to the point where I actually made him laugh. I thought, this is just too much. All I have to do is have a microphone, a mixer, and a computer monitor, and I got Steve Hogarth on my show. It's fantastic.
Tom, that is great. You know, and I had forgotten you had done that. I need to go back and listen to that.
Oh, what fun it was, Brad. What a blast.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I bet I've got his two books he's just published this year.
Well, he mentioned them on the show.
Year.
I said, I want you to tell us something that you're spilling the beans about for the first time on the Tom Woods Show that you haven't told anybody else. And so he came out with that, which I guess the super-duper fans knew about, but they didn't know it was coming out in two volumes till he said it on my show.
Oh,
so they were all really
great.
Excited that I thought, well, you know, hey, what am I here for if not to give you guys scoops?
Talk about a poet. I mean, that guy can write.
Oh, the Invisible Man. The Invisible Man.
No,
I actually read those lyrics after he got off the line with me. I read them to people. Because that just blew me away when I read those.
Marbles is such a great. And, you know, I don't know if you know, Tom, there's a young libertarian, great young woman at Georgetown. She's getting her PhD, Gianna Englert. And I'm sure you guys are probably Facebook fans.
I don't think I know her.
I don't know anyone in America who knows Marillion more than she does. So you two definitely have to connect. She's a great person. I've met her through a couple of Liberty funds and some other things. Just a wonderful person.
Well, I'll leave this. I mean, of course, I realize that at this point, I probably have lost some of the listeners, but you have to indulge the host for a couple of episodes a year. You know, like I slave away for you people.
Absolutely.
I want to talk music with Brad Berzer, but I'm going to something that I think is unique for Marillion as compared to other bands, that every couple of years, there is something called Marillion Weekend in several major cities around the world. There's usually one in, there's one in the Netherlands, there's one in Canada, and there may be one in, is it in England or some other place? But it's a weekend where for several days, every single day, you're getting a Marillion concert. And then during the day, they have all kinds of events planned. Now, in Canada, it's more of a you're on your own during the day. But the idea is that this band is there night after night to perform for people who come from all around the world for this experience. And I finally said to myself, you know, to heck with it. I am going to this thing because I believe that they're going to perform Anarachnophobia and Marbles in their entirety at this thing. And when my little daughter Sarah was born this year in March of 2014, and I'm sitting there with her in the NICU where she had to be for 11 days after birth, what a weirdo, but I actually sang to her the fairly straightforward, not particularly progressive, but fairly straightforward Marillion song, Map of the World, about this young woman who's going through sort of a workaday life.
And,
but she aspires to one day just break free of it all and go see the world and the city that she lives in is beckoning her to come in and spend money, but she's saving her money to just break free of it all and go have a better life. And I thought, I hope that's you someday.
That's great. I love that. I hope that's true as well. Oh,
all right. Well, listen, Brad, I'm going to let you go.
It's wonderful talking.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm going to, of course, link to Progarchy. I know you're not with them anymore, but you do write for them.
That's right. I'm their I'm editor at large. Yeah, and that goes back to asking, how do I digest all this? I got to a point where I just couldn't as much as I wanted to.
Right. But that is just helping to found that site was such a service to all of us. So I'll link to that. I'll link to your pieces about – I want to link to your piece about the Pink Floyd album and your top eight albums. So there'll be a lot of resources at tomwoods.com/310. Is there anything else involving anything you're doing? Is it theimaginativeconservative.org?
That's right. Yeah, Winston Elliott and I founded that in 2010, and I think a solid, ecumenically right website. Yeah, just I've had a great time with that. Thanks, Tom.
Okay, so I'll definitely link to that. All right, Brad, best to you in the new year. I hope we can talk again soon.
Yes, me too. Thanks, Tom. Great talking. Merry Christmas.
Same to you. All right, everybody, that is the show. And remember, tomorrow is the last episode I'll be doing until 2015. We'll return January 5th, 2015, refreshed and rested. But make sure and tune in tomorrow for one last episode before Christmas. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.